You thought Millard, Kyprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Not only Hockey Central at noon, but the farewell edition. And what a day to have it. Last one of the season. We'll turn it over to Baseball Central that will make their move to noon and on TV next week. But it's the way we finish on the day of the draft with Scott Morrison and Gord Stellick. I'm Brad Fay. We appreciate you joining us. And as expected, guys, there has been movement already on this day. We thought it would be a busy one and a few moves to talk about. But most importantly, when it comes to Canadian markets, is Robin Lehner is on the move. There was talk Ottawa is going to move either Anderson or Lehner. They signed the Hamburglar, but it's he and Legwon, which is a key for a lot of people, getting rid of that contract, so to speak, to Buffalo for the number 21 overall pick. And that seems to be a little work of genius by Ottawa. It's been a good couple of years for Ottawa and the management team.
Well, it has. And getting, you know, last year, Corey Schneider was a first-round pick. The New Jersey Devils give up. And, you know, quite often you find with goaltenders, you think there's more value, but there's usually a glut, and people always think, well, we can maybe develop a guy or get another guy cheaper. But in this case, for the Ottawa Senators, that you're able to parlay that into a first-round pick and also move the contract. That's the other big thing you'll see more and more as far as trying to work out salary situations, that you take a, I would say, dog contract, not a dog player, but a contract that isn't a good one for the Ottawa Senators. So, and in Tim Murray's case, I mean, the future is, I don't know whether it's now, but it's getting closer to now, and you want to get the goaltender that you're going to build on. And he knows him well, Scott, from the Ottawa Senator days, that's for sure.
Yeah, no question. And a great comment from Tim Murray. Quote, if you'd have told me we'd end up with Eichel, Kane, and Lehner for three first-round picks, I'd have said you were high on mushrooms.
Very nice.
He's excited.
And you'd be laughing.
A little happier than he was on...
And that,
on the day he found he was getting number two, he's a little happier that
pick. Absolutely. And that that Lehner portion of the trade, as we know, remains to be seen, because the guy has been pegged as the future goalie in Ottawa, not going to be there now, and a future star goalie. And if he becomes a Tuukka Rask type of player where he is solid for the next 5, 6, 7 years, then it's a real win for Buffalo. But right now, Ottawa doesn't need Robin Lehner, and win for them.
Well, in Buffalo may have the longest shortly interrupted legacy when you think of Dominic Hasek and then Ryan Miller. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were a team that was always low on the salary cap, but were competitive, and it all began and ended with the goaltending in a lot of ways. I know Tim Murray wasn't part of it, but certainly he's been with an Ottawa situation that's struggled with goaltending. Goaltending's always been a bit of an Achilles heel. So it's like they're back to the Ryan Miller or Dominic Hasek, dare we say, type scenario, that they've got one guy they really believe in and hope he's the goaltending stud of the future.
And as you say, Tim, familiar with Lehner, given his history with the Ottawa Senators, and would have been part of that draft.
As mentioned, it is the NHL draft today, and I wish that we could have found someone who knew a little bit about junior hockey. Yeah, we'll settle for Jeff Merrick. No equal in this country. Jeff is there, right, and on TV and on radio. And, Jeff, I know for you it's got to be like Christmas Day, as it is for a lot of people, but this is something you follow all year, and now it comes to fruition.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, we always talk about, you know, Scotty and I have talked about this, Gordon and I have talked about this. You know, if you're in the sports industry, you sell one of two things. You sell wins or you sell hope. And today and tomorrow, round one today, 2-7 tomorrow, these are the days where every franchise sells hope to their teams and hope to their fans as well. And in a lot of ways, you're right, it's time to start opening the presents now. And the presents seem to be early. You mentioned Robin Lehner, and the speculation around Sunrise is now perhaps Ottawa bundles those two first-round draft picks, and they try to move up. Boston's trying to move up a lot. Anaheim's trying to move up as well. So tonight's draft coverage may end up like trade deadline day more so than draft coverage, boys.
Yeah, it does seem more and more that it's always been quality over quantity. But now, rather than having the two first-round picks, if you can get in the top five or six, that's where you want to go, and you don't pass it up.
Yeah, you know, there's a drop-off, Gordy, as you know, after two, after Jack Eichel. And then there's that pack of players. There's your Dylan Stroms and your Mitch Marners and your Noah Hanifins and your Lawson Krause and Ivan Provorov, these types of players. And that's kind of where everybody wants to be right now. And that's no disrespect to, you know, Matthew Barzal, Zach Werenski, any of these types of players. But everybody kind of wants to be on that second tier right now. Perhaps nobody more so than Columbus. Columbus has been one of the more aggressive teams in the past couple of days, trying to jump up and get as high as three. But you're right. You're not going to get the first two. Those are the franchise-changing players. But everybody wants to kind of be in that second pack of players, that Marner, Strome, and Hanifin pack.
I'm channeling my best Keith Olbermann here for you. Because you were the star of that show the other night. But so what are you hearing about those three, four picks? How do you see that unfolding?
Oh, boy. It's a great question, Scott. There's a number of different theories. One theory has the Arizona Coyotes holding on to the third overall pick. And if they do, don't be surprised if they select Mitch Marner. As we know, the NHL is a replica league. What works with one team, everyone else tries to copycat. And if they draft Mitch Marner, they can replicate a poor man's version of the triplets line in Tampa Bay. They already have Max Domi, they have Christian Dvorak, and if you add Mitch Marner, then you have one of, if not the best line last year in the Ontario Hockey League. If that happens, there is some speculation that the Maple Leafs would try to trade down to five, do a deal with the Carolina Hurricanes, and flip picks. But at this point right now, everything is completely fluid. Colorado is trying to move up. As I mentioned, Columbus is really trying to move up. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Arizona moves the pick, Carolina shifts places with the Maple Leafs, and maybe the Maple Leafs go down as far as eight. But everyone still does want to stay in that top 10, Scotty.
You mentioned Colorado, Jeff, and now signing Carl Soderberg to the five-year deal after they acquired him. Does that mean Ryan O'Reilly could be bait to move up in the draft, or would that not be a fact?
It depends how high they want to go. If they want to go as high as three, then absolutely Ryan O'Reilly will be a factor. Specifically, when you look at the Arizona Coyotes, who are, I believe, $18 million shy of the salary cap floor. So they'll need to get some money in there just to make the salary cap floor. Some speculation going around today. The Boston Bruins may want to do something with Dougie Hamilton, may want to jump in on that third spot as well. They would draft the Boston kid, Noah Hanifin, and flip Dougie Hamilton to Arizona. That was the rumor going around the media event center earlier on this morning. But make no mistake about it, if Colorado is going to get up to that third spot and draft the defenseman that they want, and make no mistake about it, they want a defenseman. They were horribly disappointed that they didn't get a defenseman in the first round last year. They took Connor Bleakley. They want a defenseman. They'll settle for Werenski, the defenseman from Michigan, but they want one of either Hanifin or Provorov, and they're willing to give up Ryan O'Reilly to get there. It's part of the package, anyhow.
A bit of a unfair question in some ways, because teams do keep it so close to the vest, and we really only hear the big trades when they come out. But, you know, we have Robin Lehner already going. You mentioned the Dougie Hamilton scenario. Any other skinny out there, whether there's a Kevin Bieksa or Phil Kessel, I mean, you know, that kind of things that maybe heated up or didn't heat up this morning?
You know, one of the teams to look at are the Carolina Hurricanes, and, you know, Eric Staal's name is very much in play. Jeff Skinner's name as well is very much in play. In some respects, in the past few years, Carolina's had some disappointing drafts. Don't be surprised if at the end of tonight, if the Carolina Hurricanes may indeed be the big movers, and they move some big players. I mean, Staal's a huge name. His name's been attached to Toronto. Jeff Skinner's name has been attached out west to teams like Minnesota. Don't be surprised if Ron Francis, you know, comes 7 o'clock Eastern, really starts to get frisky. Maybe holds on to the pick, maybe he doesn't, but don't be surprised if the Carolina Hurricanes, at the end of today, are the big team to make the big moves.
Obviously, all the kids, especially in the top 10 or dozen, are so well-regarded, Jeff. But is there one kid that you look at in that group, but maybe dark horse isn't the right phrase, but a kid that maybe in a couple of years people look back and say, wow, how did he go eighth or ninth and not third or fourth?
Yeah, maybe Lawson Krause is that guy. You know, Krause is an interesting character. You look at the numbers and you say to yourself, well, they're rather pedestrian, thank you very much, until you sort of peel back the onion and you say to yourself, well, he was supposed to have Sam Bennett as a centerman in Kingston all season long. He got injured in Calgary camp and didn't come on until the end of the season. And so he played with Juho Lamico. With all due respect to the Finn, you know, he's a late-round pick by the Florida Panthers. So in a lot of ways, Lawson Krause had to lug the mail all by himself a lot of times. And he did a little bit of everything for Parle McFarland, his head coach in Kingston. He killed penalties. He blocked shots. He played the defensive side of the game. He did chip in offensively. And when you look at the offensive production, once Sam Bennett showed up, he was a point, maybe a point and a half game player for the Kingston Frontenacs all the way down the stretch. And even more so, if you measure up the numbers, which is what Lawson Crouse is putting up this season in his draft year, they are directly comparable to Rick Nash. He's an NHL size frame already. He can play next season. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe Lawson Crouse falls lower than he should. And Scott, to your point, we look at this draft a couple years, you know, down the road and say to ourselves, wow, how did Lawson Crouse fall as far as he did?
Is Doug McLean going to get a GM job between now and tonight? Then if it's the Rick Nash comparison, then he goes
along. Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's funny because last year, right around this time, Doug interviewed for the Pittsburgh Penguins coaching position, and Doug will be here in Sunrise for the draft. So don't be surprised if Doug has the ear of some team presidents, if not owners.
Now, take a look. You mentioned about last year. I think you already talked about, you know, one player about moving down, but the Richie guy was a guy you really liked, and Anaheim had to be happy to get him later on in the draft. And you follow the junior game quite extensively. Is there a guy not in that first two groups that you like if there's a sleeper that you think if you're picking a little bit later on you'd take a flyer on?
Yeah, you know what? There's a kid out of Sweden who had a great second half, had a really good U18, kind of had a soft first half, and the speculation is Detroit will take them if they keep their pick. His name is Joel Eriksson Ek, 200-foot guy. He sort of meets the requirements of what is expected from a Detroit Red Wings player. He may be the guy that somewhere, you know, I don't think he falls much more than 20, but if he does, someone's really got themselves a steal. Noah Juleson's a defenseman from the Everett Silvertips as well. If he goes in that bottom 10, someone's got themselves a steal. Don't be surprised as well if another defenseman goes a little bit earlier than people may expect. His name is Vince Dunn. He's a defenseman with the Niagara Ice Dogs. He skates like P.K. Subban. Some people, when they watch him play, say, that's a 17-year-old P.K. Subban we're watching right now. Turnovers are an issue, but there is going to be, late in the first round, a run on defensemen. Don't be surprised if Vince Dunn is one of those players that jumps up from the second round to the first round. And don't be surprised if it's a Carolina Hurricanes that trade up and try to get a second pick in the first round to grab that defenseman. They love what he brings to the game. He interviewed really well, and Carolina has been calling everybody in the OHL about Vince Dunn specifically.
So if Arizona hangs on the number 3, the Leafs hang on the number 4, who do you see going in those slots? You had Marner, I think, number 3?
Yeah, speculation is they would hang on to Marner, although there are many within that organization that want Dylan Strome. Figuring it's too hard to pass up a 6'3" centerman who led the OHL in scoring. Knowing that if you're going to win in the West, you have to do it with big centermen. But maybe the temptation to reunite that line from London,
you mentioned that,
is too much for Don Maloney. At that point, you know, then the question becomes, what do the Maple Leafs do? And if they want one of those two defensemen, do they trade down? Do they flip picks with the Carolina Hurricanes? That seems to be the speculation around a lot of agency I talked to over the past couple of days. We strongly suspect that if Marner's gone, the Maple Leafs go up for a defenseman. But if Marner's available at 4, don't be surprised if the Maple Leafs take him.
As always, Jeff, phenomenal information. Enjoy the day. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll watch it unfold on Sportsnet later on.
Could end up being like trade deadline day, boys. Should be an exciting one.
That is Jeff Merrick in Florida.
It's interesting because there's just no consensus on who that third pick should be.
Absolutely, and that's where the intrigue starts.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. Wouldn't it be interesting if somebody just comes along and blows someone's socks off and suddenly we have a trade, Sidney Crosby to Buffalo for the number 2. But it's going to start with that number 3 pick, and then, as you say, everything falls in line after that because, as Jeff just, even with the Maple Leafs at 4.
But nobody knows what that line looks like.
Maple Leafs 4, you got 3 different scenarios that could happen depending if somebody trades up. If Arizona hangs on, sounds like they would take Marner, but he says half of the camp wants Dylan Strome. So the good thing is if you're in that top 5, 6, 7, you're going to get a good player. It's just a matter of whether you get the position that you want.
Well, and a couple of years ago, Florida took Barkov instead of Seth. You know, so Seth Jones is the guy that landed with Nashville, and that's what could happen here. I mean, Marner's, they all are really guys that the teams are starting at number 3 really would take them with the 3rd overall pick, and then you got other teams that maybe they would slide to 6th or 7th. So, but there's a lot of machinations there.
But you're a proponent of, if you're in the number 3 hole, not taking the 3rd best forward, but taking The best defenseman?
Well, actually, I did it. It was the fourth best forward
best
I was looking
at. Okay.
But I just did it a comparable from the Toronto Maple Leafs point of view. If they were picking fourth, I mean, you can do it with every team, but just that slot. And the Leafs' illustrious history is Lanny McDonald, who is a Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. and Ally Afraidy, who's a Hall of Fame personality. And yes. He's an NHLer. They were both fourth overall picks. But just with our guest who's coming up soon, Aaron Ekblad, for example, that just the last 7-8 years, there's absolutely no question when you look at it, the number one defenseman pick compared to the number four forward that was picked. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Seth Jones and Drew Doughty and Victor Hedman, and the list goes on and on. I just, looking at it, said, wow, it really shows it's very hard to pass up that stud number one defenseman.
It's the way the league is going, where your best defenseman plays 7 or 8 minutes more than your best forward on a nightly basis, if not more than that. It's hard to go through the list of Stanley Cup winners. You have to go back a long way, or maybe one odd one in there that didn't have that alpha dog defenseman. It's been a staple of championship teams.
And this is going to be an interesting draft, what, 2, 3, 4 years down the road to look back on, because as you say, you know, in that top 10, for instance, you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to get a good player, but you might have missed on a great player. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't fault a team for what they do today in that judgment, but down the road you could look back and say, why didn't we go down that road?
Absolutely. And that's what we did the other day with that draft book, which is fair or unfair, depending. But anyway, coaching news, just quickly to pass on this just out, the Anaheim Ducks AHL affiliate, the San Diego Gulls, have hired Dallas Eakins.
Oh, okay.
As the first head coach in franchise history. So good for Dallas. Gets to go to the most livable city in North America, San Diego. What a beautiful place. That'll be interesting to tap hockey there. And also to mention, because you had thrown it out to Jeff and he never got around to it, Kevin Bieksa, because the rumblings are that he has agreed to waive, and it sounds like San Jose. There's nothing done there. But in regard, it just makes me laugh. I don't think there's a team that the Canucks banged heads harder with and went at, especially Bieksa, than San Jose, them and Anaheim. So the fact that he beat them with the overtime goal to send them to the Stanley Cup final. So it's interesting how it works. Pretty quickly, it's like, hate that guy. Welcome to the fold. We're glad to have you. And that's something, if it happens, we're just talking in those terms, but that's something that San Jose could use, that little bit of sandpaper, even if it's a bit of a risk on the back end sometimes.
Well, and rumbles, too, that they're interested in Cam Talbot. Shore up their goaltending situation. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because you think of Vancouver dealing with Anaheim last year in the Kessler deal. So you do what you have to do. And one team may hate a player when he's on the other side, but you sure love him when he's
on your
roster.
Tiger Williams was the first example of that for me as a kid that I remember. So we'll continue to wait on that. I mentioned in passing to Jeff that the Avs signed Carl Soderberg to a 5-year deal. The Predators have signed Mike Fisher to a 2-year, $8.8 million extension. And if you're just joining us on Hockey Central with Scott Morrison and Gord Stelick, I'm Brad Fay. The big deal on the day so far, Robin Lehner and David Legwand to Buffalo for the number 21 overall pick. Cam Talbot and Eddie Lack. Scott mentioned Cam Talbot. Eddie Lack remain the other goalies on the market. And both of them, it just seems like it's a done deal that they're going to go. Just a matter of where, because the teams aren't even hiding that fact at this
point. Well, yeah, and now puts a little bit, once one team gets a first-round pick, right? So you're Price, if you're the Rangers and you think he's comparable, Cam Talbot, as to Robin Lehner, then that's the expectation or the perception
Fair
that the
too.
Fans are thinking that way. Also with Soderberg, Colorado and Ryan O'Reilly, that situation. You know, you mentioned Dougie Hamilton as well, that it's not just unrestricted free agents. It's other guys like that, that, you know, he had the bold move a couple of years ago, and certainly Colorado changed their makeup and it didn't. They took a step backwards last year, being more of a veteran team. So that's another name that could do. The tires are being kicked on and could have something done by 7 o'clock.
And a good move by Dean Lombardi in L.A., re-upping Tyler Toffoli 2 years, $6.5 million. So he's been a key piece over the past couple of seasons. So nice to keep him for a couple more years.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that doesn't come to the forefront when you think of the Kings with the likes of the big line and the 70s line and Drew Doughty, et cetera, the goaltender Jonathan Quick. But when you ask people inside the game, all the guys, especially guys in around here that played in the NHL recently, they all say this is a guy that they love and want on the team. I like the yellow uniforms, by the way, if you're watching on TV. Those are the all-time Rogie Vachon jersey in the 30 and the yellow is my favorite. But Toffoli's one of those guys, and again, as one I always liken back to the Islanders, the guys like Bourne and Tinelli that became stars because they won. They were the second tier of a group behind Trotsche and company, but you need those guys.
Yeah, and on a management front, it's I like the term. You know, that's the thing. A lot of guys, a lot of times you're getting hamstrung with these second contracts. That's why the draft has become more valuable. That really, I know when Gary Bettman and company put the CBA in place in 2005, they thought there's a salary cap, there would be a bump for the second contract, and then you'd win the lottery being an unrestricted free agent. But then all of a sudden, those second contracts for Drew Doughty and Steven Stamkos and many others became what they had envisioned after unrestricted free agency. So a Toffoli one is kind of a good bridge at a reasonable amount, but not an onerous length. So you can see where he stands 2 years down the road, but also all these other kids they're drafting. I mean, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, their salary cap situation is phenomenal because of the great play of their young players who are undervalued right now, but not, you know, because they're on entry-level contracts compared to their abilities.
And you think when Jeff mentioned that Ottawa, there's rumblings they could package their two first-rounders and try to move up as well. And if they got into number three, then you talk about it's all world. Couple of off seasons for Ottawa if they end up drafting Marner or Strome or somebody like that. So we know Edmonton's picking first. We know who they're taking, but as it stands now, Toronto would be the first Canadian team to pick after that when it all gets interesting, but maybe not. And the Senators might not be done, which would be a lot of fun.
Well, it seems like the line is getting longer. Let's put it that way for the,
yeah.
And Arizona Maloney's counting door.
Its, yeah. 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 Good point.
Well, then they've got an opportunity, and it's, Gord, you've been at that table and had to make that decision over the years, but, you know, you're in a situation where you're kind of torn that you like that number three pick, you know you're going to get a great player with it, but if you can get multiple assets and moving down, maybe that's a better place to be given where you are in the terms of the development of your franchise.
Yeah, and you can't be totally married to the what-if situation. And it appears like, you know, the top two guys are obviously like any draft, but these two, good chance of being certainly star or superstar players. And then it's always, oh, well, if we give up the number three, it'll come back and bite us in the butt. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't think that way. I mean, you have to really equate and evaluate what they are, and it certainly is a future. But if you can get more in the present, you've got to give your head a shake a little bit and look at that.
And I think it's a question the Leafs have to be asking as well in the four hole, depending on what happens ahead of them. Again, if you go back to 7, 8, 9 maybe in that draft and you get two picks, you know, two more picks, or maybe you get a couple second rounders thrown in as well, all of a sudden you've got the opportunity to go out and get 4 or 5 assets in those first two rounds as opposed to just a couple.
When you need, you're a team that needs
when you need a lot of them.
To build that turnaround, especially if you're talking about unloading Kessel and Phaneuf, which is a daily topic here. I heard debate on the radio this morning whether the Leafs should be in a hurry to do it with Phil Kessel or whether you think of it as an asset and you wait and see how he plays under Babcock and then maybe the value goes up or maybe there's a fit there. I know it's going to come down to, so without the obvious answer of depends what somebody is offering, you feel that that's because it's a bit of a cloud hanging over that it's better to do that quickly if you're the Leafs?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. I mean, obviously today the one thing you can do is throw in a draft pick in this year's draft, right? But I don't know how much that's a priority or not for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's really a process that a lot of teams are looking at the big enchilada about different, you know, different little ingredients that they want to add. Going, so if you did it today, I don't think you really sussed out of the 29 other teams what they wouldn't even be able to totally suss out yet where exactly he could or couldn't fit on their team, and then you start talking turkey about trades.
I think you only do it today if you get blown away by the offer, and it has to be something in the first round that you know what you're going to get, a terrific player with a very high pick. But I don't think you have to feel like there's a deadline of having to do it by today. But I also don't believe his value is going to be enhanced from performance level or playing under Babcock. You know what, the Leafs certainly know what he is and whether you want that to be a piece moving forward. And other teams know what you're getting at Phil Kessel.
That's not going to
change dramatically.
No, well, there's
coach.
Already a history because he was traded at this very day, right? Mm-hmm. The first time. But then Boston and Toronto mixed up about this bonus first-round pick the Bruins thought they were getting that the Leafs didn't think was part of the deal. So in that case, you saw that the Bruins, they both backed off. And, you know, 4 months later, they still extracted a real good price for Phil Kessel. It got better because of where the Leafs finished. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's not like his value diminishes that much. I mean, he's still a valued commodity.
One Canadian team's made a move. That's Robin Leonard out of Ottawa to Buffalo along with David Legault for the number 21 overall pick. We hear rumblings that a Kevin Bieksa to San Jose deal may be imminent. We'll keep watching those. We'll also connect with Aaron Ekblad, last year's first overall pick and the rookie of the year in the NHL. When we come back on Hockey Central at noon, stay tuned.
Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on Hockey Central at noon, I'm Brad Fay with Gord Stellick and Scott Morrison on this draft day. It comes your way later tonight, 6:30 Eastern, the preview show, 7 o'clock, the draft from Florida on Sportsnet. Coverage across the board. We already heard from Jeff Merrick and his angle. It's always fun to talk to Jeff because you can throw anything at him. What if you got a late third round pick? There's a kid out of Germany that, you know, like he loves it. And it's great information as always. But a lot of teams, we talk about the first round, you focus on that. But a lot of, when you look through the guidebook, a lot of great teams have been built on those late picks that somehow come through. The margin is so small at the age of 18.
You know, I got to think if you're a scout that you really enjoy tomorrow more. You know, that mm-hmm. tonight, I mean, that's when you do your job. It's a smaller crowd, and that's when there's real more arguments. There's a lot more of that going, a lot more of the scouting data, a lot more debates, where tonight there's so many minutes between picks, and it's the pomp and circumstance. And that's
the one that's going to be your poster.
Yeah, and it's exciting getting the player, don't get me wrong, yeah. But it's, you know, the president's there of the team, everyone, photo ops. I think day two, most of them fly home, yeah. Right? They're not going to be involved in it, so... So you do, and that really is the day when the work is done for those teams like the Chicago Blackhawks or the LA Kings before that win the Stanley Cup. You're absolutely right about that.
Only thing, go ahead, Scott.
Well, no, I was just going to say that when you look at how everything is unfolding, July 1st has now got a different dynamic to it because of those star players locking up long-term contracts that, you know, the draft has taken on an even greater importance. And as we see the league get younger, you know, having those picks and having them in abundance can really be a difference maker for turning around a franchise.
And you have to wait. That's the only thing I think for casual fans, sometimes they have a problem with, where you watch the NFL draft and you watch the NBA draft, and those first round picks, most of them are going to make the team and play right away, if not be big contributors. And in the NHL, it's usually, what's the average? Probably three to four guys from that first round each year that would make it as an 18-year-old. I mean, you saw it in Vancouver, Bo Horvat went back to junior and then had a great rookie year last year. He needed the maturity. A guy like Aaron Ekblad steps right in and wins the rookie of the year. But would you like to see it go to 19, or do you like it getting staying where it is?
I'd keep it where it is. You know, I mean, I think you always used to say biasly on the management side, the later the better, you know, one, particularly with entry-level contracts, you know, one less year that way and one more year to evaluate the players. But Sean Monahan's a guy that sixth overall jumped right in the NHL, and we extol the virtues of the Tampa Bay Lightning, as we should. And yet Jonathan Drouin was a guy that they took high, and Steve Yzerman right away said he's going back to junior when pretty well everyone else around him didn't. And, you know, they get to the Stanley Cup final, and he's still a guy you're trying to figure out what his identity is, you know, compared to a Sean Monahan who just fit like a glove in Calgary.
Well, and as you say, excuse me, everybody's different. And from a management standpoint, I suppose you have to figure out where's the best place for the kid to play. Where is he going to develop most as a player? And sometimes it is going back to junior, and sometimes junior just isn't good enough, and you're better off being in that NHL environment and learning, because you learn a lot just being around a team and being involved in practices.
Yeah, Morgan Rielly was a good example of that. I thought because of his injury situation in junior that he'd be an automatic for the Leafs to send back. And then his first year, he did spend a lot of games in the press box, and you started thinking, okay, has this been counterproductive? But it's counterproductive, I think, if you don't embrace it and learn. And like you say,
yeah,
Scott,
make it a learning experience.
That's right. So when you're in the press box and that, you're actually going to school. I mean, you're actually being a student of the game rather than saying, geez, I'm not happy here. I'd rather be playing in junior, or I should be out there. And that's what he did. And I got to say that one was a little bit of a surprise, because I absolutely thought he should have gone back to junior, and I was wrong.
Even look at a guy like Johnny Hockey, and, you know, was struggling out of the gate with Calgary this past season. I think it was six or seven games in, Bob Hartley sat him out, put him in the press box and said, this isn't punishment. I just want you to watch the game, and we're going to talk about this when it's all said and done. Sat down, and then all of a sudden the light went on and he figured some things out, and we all know how that season played out.
Like quarterbacks in football, again, to use an analogy, I did it the other day too, is somebody, you take the quarterback out for a couple of series or a couple of plays, you get to see it from a different perspective, because when you're playing and everything's happening that fast, especially going to the NHL level, then you sit up and watch and go, okay, I see how it works. Talk about sending guys back. I was thinking Toronto. It seemed like Carlo Koliakovo was like 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
He's got him. And he was probably at his best that first training camp when he just about made the team. And a lot of people thought he should have and got sent back. And then he never reached that level in Toronto again when he kept getting hurt. But he, as an 18-year-old, he was that close to making the team.
Well, that's why, you know, when you look at Toronto's history, and it'd be the same for all Canadian-based teams, I think, to a degree, that pressure and excitement because they embrace that player. And there's that they never say we're going to rush him, but then you end up rushing him.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of a losing streak. And you go back to Jeff Ware or Luke Richardson, who played a full season, but then the second season started sitting in the press box. You know, and Gord, they didn't have a lot of picks the last 10, 15 years to do it because they traded a lot of them away. But yeah, I was going to say that's why when they take a defenseman fourth overall, I still think they should do that if that's the choice. But historically, rushing a defenseman hasn't been the best thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, again, the individual, you have to gauge his maturity and where he is in terms of his development. And at the end of the day, the question still becomes, where is he best placed to be to further his development?
All right, let's. We're waiting to hear from Aaron Ekblad. I'd always got to be busy being in Florida if he is there, but at least being a home.
He got picked last year. What's he busy about?
Well, you know, it's just probably everybody wants to know. That's what we're going to ask him about. But then when Dale Tallon held off on all offers and stayed true and said we're going to, you know, and they needed to get money up for the floor and needed to get better in a hurry, but he said, not worth keeping the pick. We're going to take the defenseman. Doesn't pay off any better than him being the rookie of the year, and now he's your stalwart for as long as you want him, as long as you can keep him. Florida is one of the rumors, and I think we should dive into this a little deeper with the Leafs, Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, only because there's been Canadian rumors too out west perhaps for Phaneuf, who knows. But in terms of Phil Kessel, it's a tough one because of the contract with 7 years left at big money. What can they rightfully expect? Because you're not necessarily going to get full value back, but you're going to gain something by getting the contract and getting the player out if he's not a right fit. So what do they expect?
If you're watching, see Phil Kessel coming out on the ice there, that he can veto 2/3 of the league. So hopefully maybe he grew his list a little bit more if the Toronto Maple Leafs asked him. And that's why earlier on when you're talking about doing the trade now, it's just a little bit more complicated that way. And Scott, I just wonder how opposing teams look at his contract. I know how you'd look at his ability. You would say, this is a guy that we absolutely know what we're getting. We're getting a top 10 scorer, is what he's done basically every year except the past year. And we're getting someone who's never been as low marketability. So that's, you want to move in on that. But then is the contract an albatross or is it an asset? That's what he's going to be paid, and we haven't locked up for a while. And I've used the Anaheim-Ottawa situation accurately or inaccurately, saying, okay, that if you're the Leafs and you can get a late first-round pick and a prospect, like, say, Silverberg was from the Ottawa Senators in the Bobby Ryan trade, you know, that would be, if you're in Toronto, you'd be happy with that. I don't know if that's what the going rate is or not out there, but that's what I would like to see if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I don't think the contract's a problem if he plays well. Mm-hmm. It's when if he becomes a stiff and you've got to sit on 4 or 5, 6 years, whatever point it is that it happens, then it becomes a burden, especially if you're cap challenged. But, you know, if you're a Florida that you've got room to play with, you desperately need goal scoring, then if you have a guy, you make a deal for a player like that, and you have that term, then I don't think it's a problem whatsoever.
Because it's, interesting, the big name. So a couple of
and
years...
And I'm not saying Florida's the destination.
Yeah.
What if?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, who thought Tyler Seguin would be in Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, that was a no-brainer for the Dallas Stars that way. Bobby Ryan, a little bit more, because much like you say, first of all, if you're interested in Phil Kessel, you got to believe he's not going to be a stiff at the end of his contract or that it becomes a bad contract. But the Bobby Ryan thing was that he could become an unrestricted free agent. I mean, that in a lot of ways was a bigger risk that Brian Murray and the Ottawa Senators were taking on. In Kessel's case, there's none of that risk. So that's where it becomes the asset, if you like him, having that contract.
See, a lot of teams now, you know, I mean, Ottawa's been busy and Vancouver last year was busy. Calgary was, and they're both those teams still. It seems Calgary's involved with Cam Talbot. Vancouver trying to move a goalie, and maybe Kevin Bieck, as we said. Is the patience factor gone now just because it's a must? I mean, we were just talking off air how Bruce Boudreaux every year has, you know, game 7 2 years in a row, losing to the Stanley Cup champions, that could have been them if they'd moved on. you said, Scott, kind of half-jokingly, I think, but Joel Quenneville and the guys 3 cups in 6 years, if they go on a five-game losing streak next year, he's looking over his shoulder. But maybe that urgency factor, just everyone's given into it now that you can't, okay, we'll slowly build. Toronto has to, but the other teams are like, no, we made the playoffs. We got to tweak. We got to be better. We got to compete because that's what people expect. Everyone wants to win.
Well, and that's what I say. It's unbelievable if you have 29 really unhappy situations.
Absolutely.
I mean, they should be disappointed, I guess, because you always aspire to win the cup, whether you really have a legitimate chance or not. So, and that's what Bruce has faced the last few years, where Mike Babcock signs for $50 million, you know, and Barry Trotz and Lindy Ruff always got credit because it was a lower salary team in Buffalo and Nashville all those years. So they, you know, basically were applauded for their work. And you know, on the other side is you're talking about some of the moves and tweaks, and certainly Anaheim has to feel bringing Kessler over. You know, that was a good tweak on the management side. Calgary, you mentioned a little bit earlier that, okay, when you've had a season like they've had, you don't want to be this year's Colorado. You know, you
want to step back next year. Yeah,
and it could happen.
Well, yeah. Very, very well. But you know, Colorado did some tweaks, but the veteran thing just didn't fit in. But if you're Calgary right now, this is where you've got some assets that have a little higher market value than they did back in October, and where a lot of people go, wow, let's build on it. You might want to say, yeah, let's get the goaltending situation straight now. Let's do a couple of pieces here right now, rather than lamenting in November, December we didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think if you're Calgary, you don't want to accelerate or try to accelerate the process. You made great strides. You've got some great young talent that developed well and stepped up, but it can happen that you hit a bit of a wall before you make that next step. So don't get ahead of yourself and find yourself trading away too much of your future to try and get the answer for now.
Yeah, I heard that when they won their first round series, some of the works within the organization said it was an unbelievable, not so much celebration like their work was done, but there was just this feeling of, can you believe that we did what we did, and it was kind of everything else was gravy. Now it's a matter of talking the fans into that and reminding them that they weren't supposed to be in the playoffs last year. They certainly weren't supposed to win a round. So they're ahead of schedule, but you may have to take, if you want to get ultimately to your goal as to be a competing team, and they have the opportunity, the blueprint is there for them, especially down the middle and on the back end. Patience again comes into it, but like you said, it may be that one move for them in the goaltending so they don't take a step back. Even if they don't take a step forward this year, getting back in the playoffs is the key.
Well, the fan reaction, let's face it, the bar is always low. People in Toronto know it, that when they get to the playoffs, whenever it is, it's going to be the honeymoon phase.
Mm-hmm.
But the honeymoon ends real quick, just like life. And in Calgary, it's going to be a different thing this year coming up as far as the expectations go. So you really, if you're Brad, you're living, and you know, whoever makes the decisions there, everybody wants the big fix. They want the big trade, the big free agent signing, whatever that. Well, meanwhile, it's all little things that every little move you make, if you feel it incrementally improves your team, you do it. And if more often than not, you're right, then you will. And it's not a quick, you know, it's picking up a guy on waivers, all these other little things. And that's what they have to stick to in Calgary, because they've done a good job with it this past year.
Well, and you look at the West and how good it is, and you think about LA's got to be better. They got to be a bounce back team. Yep. Colorado, do they get, you know, they take that
Dallas
step back.
Everybody had expectations.
Dallas is another one that
San Jose
showed
them,
signs.
Right?
San Jose. You could miss the playoffs and still have a very good year.
Yeah. Well, and Edmonton, too. I mean,
well, like, and Edmonton, you know, at some point is going to step up. I don't have them in the playoffs like you do.
Well, I don't know, man. It's kind of like the New York Islanders. You know, you get the high picks,
And then all of a sudden it clicks.
Yeah. And then add a couple of veterans.
Well, they got to fix the goalie situation, and they got to fix Edmonton.
Oh, Edmonton. Okay.
And the blue line.
Yeah.
If they make some big moves at the back end, then that maybe changes the landscape.
Just keep the puck in the offensive zone. Yeah,
exactly.
That may be the style.
Even Mark Spector the other day, you could hear him in not a cheerleader by any means, but when you cover a team, as you did for years, Scott, but the Leafs, it's a lot more fun when they're winning and there's some energy around it. But you could just hear it through the phone line with Spec. It's like, this is a, you know, because the management's turned over the coach. Now they got this first draft pick where the other ones were all, and Taylor Hall to me is a legitimate star in the league. The other guys weren't that guy.
Yeah.
Yakupov and Ryan Nugent Hopkins are like, I got first
pick. They weren't
pick.
Stamkos or Tavares or that kind of.
And they missed out the year before. Their three in a row was one of those guys, Stamkos, and the year after was Tavares. Like, they just missed. So this is finally where they know, okay, we're getting a guy that even we can't mess this up. And it's amazing how quickly that turns around. So now all the people that were upset in Edmonton of the years and years of losing, and saying, oh, we can't wait another 5 years. Now they're like, okay, no, we can wait a couple of years because now we really feel like it's going to get better. And I think with Edmonton, the key is, and I think some people are of this thought, and I am without any experience in management, is that all those number one picks that you've got, and now it's time, if you can package one of them with something else and get a defenseman or a goalie in return for that, a frontliner guy, then you do it because Connor McDavid's going to take the spot of a couple of those guys.
Yeah, I see a lot of the mock drafts are speculating that Edmonton, if they stick with their second first round pick, that they would very likely could be the first team to take a goalie and decide to go that way. Where the other one is, yeah, just to package it all, move up, get two, and in the top four or yeah. five or whatever it may be.
Which would be wild.
And go home.
And you're saying, yeah, go home
it's
and
like
get
Jack
there.
The Bear, yeah.
And like Mike Ditka in New Orleans, get a defenseman, get Connor McDavid, and then you're like, wow, you're really, all of a sudden you win the offseason. A lot of teams in that mix.
If I'm Edmonton, I'm packaging those picks.
Yep.
Not the first one. And maybe one of those young players, and I'm knocking on Arizona's door, and I'm wanting to walk out of there with 1-3 and hit the home run.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? And let's go back to Buffalo with the second pick that and the way Tim Murray talked that they had home runs. And your quote was great that you pulled out there. You would have told me I'm on mushrooms if we end up
high on mushrooms.
High on mushrooms with Eichel, Kane, and Robin Leonard. So beyond what they do on the ice and where they end up, because they've got a slow build as well, are you comfortable with being a guy that's from Ontario and Buffalo's kind of that secondary team? Everybody wants them to do well. Are they back now on square footing with ownership and with Eichel coming in? Do you think there's going to be great excitement around the Sabres that there's always been in the history of that franchise?
Yeah, I really think so. I mean, there's you see with the Buffalo Bills as well with the same owner. Like, you know, when it's gotten, this is where I feel for the Arizona fans in the sense that when it's constantly about who wants to own this team, when you're an orphan franchise, you know, and because it all starts with ownership and ownership that'll pour money in and ownership that's tied to the local area. And certainly Terry Pegula's that. And the quick start was the quick fix, kind of like Mike Yelich did when he bought the Detroit Red Wings, right? And then Jimmy Devoliano convinced him after he signed the Ray Stazaks of the world and all those guys that you got to build and do it right. And Buffalo that first summer, Christian Ehrhoff, whoever it would be, let's throw money at them. And now going along with the rebuild, the dismantle, and the rebuild, and then you mentioned those three assets. I mean, wow, to get that in a matter of a couple of months, Tim Murray's right.
Well, there should be nothing but excitement in Buffalo because you're getting a great player with that number two pick, those three assets that we've talked about, excellent to build around. Your front office and your coaching staff are both outstanding as well, and there's never going to be a shortage of money. You've got a passionate owner who's willing to spend. So yeah. I think it may take a little bit of time yet, but the future is bright for that organization.
Eddie Lack's dad tweeted, his parents are very active on the social media and on TV, aren't they? It was funny, the Calgary fans during the series with Vancouver, stop showing Eddie Lack's mom. And then it went the other way with, who was a guy who had the series, Ferlin, who had the series of his life for Calgary, and they were showing his mom all the time.
Yeah.
And so we're both, but anyway, Willie Lack, Eddie Lack's dad, tweeted, hopefully this guy stays a Canuck, fingers crossed, and a little prayer to the guy upstairs. For a word on Vancouver, Eddie Lack, is that the guy you move? You can't move Ryan Miller, and I guess maybe Markstrom doesn't get as much back. So are you comfortable with that goaltending tandem where you got Miller for another year if they want to buy him out, or two if he stays, and then you bring in Markstrom, who's gotten rave reviews down in the minors? Or is that the way you'd go?
First, I'm wondering, so when Eddie Lack played, did Roberto Luongo show his dad how to work Twitter? Was that the thing? Kind of nice. They're hanging back
that's
there.
Right.
What a good teammate that. See, I still think you brought Ryan Miller in to ride him. And I like the fact that they signed him to not big term. So I would make that move like you're talking about.
Let Markstrom get him ready.
Yeah, no disrespect to Eddie Lack. I just still think you made the Ryan Miller was the way to go.
And he's got the most value if you're going to make the deal.
Yeah.
No question about it. Miller's there. And to Gord's point, he's the guy you got to ride. And Lack will get you the better return.
With 1 minute to go in the season for Hockey Central at noon, so what do? We'd like to thank the city of Sunrise, Florida. We'd like to congratulate the Chicago Blackhawks and those fans watching at our team party.
Our team party somewhere, yeah.
Yes, all
Central
of that.
Central Scouting, I think they get a nod,
that's
too.
Right.
Yeah, well.
They used to do that at the end.
Yeah.
Say have a good summer, but I got a feeling we're all going to see and hear from each other a little bit because it's going to be an active one, no question. It already began today. One more time, if you're just joining us, Robin Leonard and Legwon to Buffalo for the number 21 overall pick, and rumblings that Kevin Bieksa could be on the move already as well, maybe to San Jose from Vancouver. For Scott Morrison and Gord Stellick, I'm Brad Fay. Been a fun year. Tune into Baseball Central starting on Monday, and tune into the draft tonight at 6:30 Eastern on Sportsnet.